and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, October 6, 2023. South Sudan's government donates millions of dollars for helping refugees and returnees.
So the challenge now we are facing is insufficient cultural resources so that we cater for all these needs because we still receive a lot. Of course, another challenge is that the people who are arriving daily are a big number.
And South Sudan's Deputy Minister of Finance denies allegations that President Salva Kiir uses money to buy loyalty.
As you know, the budget is for the whole South Sudan, the different institutions. Each ministry has a budget. And this budget, you have a right to write a letter to Minister of Finance to deduct it from your budget.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs has approved $10 million US for assisting returnees and refugees fleeing the conflict in Sudan. The Minister of Humanitarian Affairs says the country needs $1.7 million US to respond to the increasing number of returnees and refugees arriving at various entry points in South Sudan. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Albino Akol Attack, South Sudan's Minister of Humanitarian Affairs, says the $10 million additional government support will help in resettling returnees and refugees arriving into the country. Attack notes that more than 291 individuals had entered South Sudan since September, and that number is expected to increase.
If we now see the trend of movement of people, how many people are arriving every day, then we would easily calculate that from here up to the end of the year, this figure would have arrived if it goes the same way we are now seeing. So we must be ready for that as the government of South Sudan, and this is why we have additionally approved this $10 million.
3 months ago, the government also approved $5 million for services at transit centers and transportation of returnees and refugees to their final destinations. Attack says estimates show that the number of returnees and refugees will hit 500,000 by the end of the year as the conflict in Sudan forces more people to flee their homes.
So the challenge now we are facing is insufficient cultural resources so that we cater for all these needs because we still receive a lot of people. Of course, another challenge is that the people who are arriving daily are a big number. For instance, if we prepare today the services that we're supposed to deliver in a specific transit site, tomorrow you will get the number double or triple.
Humanitarian agencies in South Sudan say they are facing a critical funding gap of more than $300 million, which has complicated efforts to respond to the increasing needs of returnees and refugees arriving in the country. Joseph Iganji is UN OCHA's head of office in South Sudan. He says the crisis in Sudan requires urgent attention.
The number of South Sudanese coming from Sudan continues on daily basis, and about 1,500 to 2,000 people are arriving per day. They are coming to areas where there are transit centers, including Reng, Awi, and other areas. So far, for the last 6 months since the crisis started, over 300,000 people, including South Sudanese returnees and refugees and nationals of that country have crossed the border into South Sudan.
Iganji says he welcomes the additional funds from the government of South Sudan.
The appeal is $358 million, and this $10 million from the government is going to support, but I think the $10 million from the government is to jumpstart the operations as we advocate for additional resources.
UN OCHA says heavy rains and flooding continue to interrupt the delivery of services and onward movement of refugees and returnees in Reng, Maban, Bentiu, and Abyei. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting from Juba.
Still in Juba, South Sudan's Deputy Minister of Finance has denied a report by the non-profit Human Security Baseline Survey for Sudan and South Sudan, which accuses President Salva Kiir of consolidating money and power among a select elite. A senior official from the Ministry of Finance says the government of South Sudan operates according to its national annual budget approved by the Cabinet and the National Legislative Assembly. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
A recent report on South Sudan's political economy by the non-profit Human Security Baseline Survey for Sudan and South Sudan accuses President Salva Kiir of centralizing public funds and using it to pay political elites in order to control power and the South Sudanese population. But Agok Makur, South Sudan's deputy finance minister, denies the allegation. In an exclusive interview with VOA today, Makur argues the Ministry of Finance is the custodians of public funds in South Sudan.
As you know, the budget is for the whole South Sudan, the different institutions. Each ministry has a budget. And this budget, you have a right to write a letter to Minister of Finance to deduct it from your budget. And even the presidential have a right also, according to the budget, to write a letter to Minister of Finance also to deduct it from their budget. We are not paying money beyond your budget.
The report by Human Security Baseline Survey states, quote, the regime of South Sudanese President Salva Kiir survives by diverting revenues in three key areas: oil production, humanitarianism, and loans from international financial institutions to the benefits of an elite class in Juba, but at the cost of the immiserating of the people of South Sudan, end quote. South Sudan's finance minister, Bak Barnabachol, admitted in August that the country's economy is facing multitudes of challenges, such as random issuance of checks, bribery in the finance ministry, and nepotism. The 15-page report also notes that South Sudan's oil revenues remain largely controlled by President Kiir through a series of off-the-book accounting mechanisms, such as the Oil for Road projects. Deputy Minister Makur says the cabinet overwhelmingly approved the use of crude oil to fund the construction of the country's road infrastructure.
This council will surpass 20,000 barrels for infrastructure, not even the road. The infrastructure including roads. There is an institution concerning the roads. There is a Minister of Road, he knows this money, Minister of Finance, and institution concerned. As a matter of fact, the Council of Ministers passing this location for the infrastructure.
Michael J. Idela, the U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, has repeatedly called on the transitional government of national unity to be transparent with revenues collected from oil revenue. The government of South Sudan increased the salaries of civil servants by 400% in its 2023-2024 budget to meet the high cost of living. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayor in Juba.
A recent report on South Sudan's capital economy by the non-profit Human Security Baseline Survey for Sudan and South Sudan, authored by Joshua Cruz, paints a bleak future for the anticipated 2024 elections in South Sudan. Cruz says the exercise could pose a significant threat to stability in the country.
The government is deeply is preparing for them. Everywhere you go, every state, there are questions about who will run as a governor, who will run as a county commissioner. Politicians are preparing their electoral war chests. There is a huge preparation around the country, both for elections and then in the more longer term for what happens after President Kiir either leaves power or passes away. The government is so serious about these elections that though they're likely to produce a great deal of unrest across the country, that has been considered a reasonable price to pay for the international legitimacy that Kiir's regime thinks will accrue to it once there are elections.
I think you use the word explosive, that it, yeah, it will possibly explosive.
It'd be very explosive. I mean, if you think about, and this is why it's very risky for Kiev, but if you think about a place like Western Equatoria, since the violence in Tambora in 2021, which really set the Zande against the Balanda, the positions, like the governor's position, are thought of as zero-sum contests. If you talk to members of the avant-garde elite, so the real elite of the Zande, people like Jim Anunu, who's the speaker of the transitional assembly, they're not going to give up. They're not going to be willing to have a Balanda governor, because these positions are increasingly seen as ethnic possessions. But neither are the Balanda going to be willing to give up the current incumbent governor, Alfred Putio Karaba. So you see communities having been set against each other since the end of the war. And that really is the danger, the explosion that can happen in certain states. And it's not even about ethnic groups. It's also inside single groups. So you think about unity. And Unity has a governor from the Bul Nur, but the Bul Nur have for many years been involved in pretty violent campaigns against other populations in the state, other Nur populations. And those Nur are waiting to get the Bul out, but the Bul are clinging on to power. And we see these tense situations across the country, and that's the situation in which we're going to have elections. And these elections already are trying to be stage managed by Kiir's regime, so that no serious opposition figures can run. And we see that in the 2023 amendment that was recently signed into law by Salva Kiir. And it's this situation that's going to produce such an explosive set of political tensions in the country.
Finally, what are your recommendations for moving forward? Your recommendations for the government of South Sudan and the international community?
South Sudan has an incredibly rich, powerful tradition of vernacular democracy. Unlike all those internationals who say, oh, there's no democracy in South Sudan, it's not true. At a local level, I have never been in a country which has more democracy than South Sudan. The problem is that it gets snuffed out by the imposition from the top, by what is effectively a sort of technocratic dictatorship imposed from Juba. So my advice to both the government and to the international community is to empower that rich local level of vernacular democracy in South Sudan, which both the international community and Juba increasingly try to tamp down and repress to allow military and humanitarian operations.
That's Joshua Chris, a Sudan and South Sudan expert. His latest report is titled Payday Loans and Backroom Empires, South Sudan's Political Economy Since 2018. He spoke with Nabil Biagio from upstate New York on Thursday. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, the new military leader in Gabon is on a coup diplomacy. Find out what that means after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Gabon's coup leader has visited the Central African Republic seeking an end to sanctions imposed by the international community. General Brice Oligui Nguema insisted that a military takeover was vital to save Gabon from an iron-fisted ruler. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Gabon's coup leader, General Brice Clotaire Oligui Nguema, says he visited the Central African Republic Thursday to tell President Faustin Archange Touadéra why he seized power from Gabon's President Ali Bongo Ondimba on August 30. Touadéra is the president of the Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC, a regional economic bloc that has Cameroon, Chad, CAR, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon and Congo as members. Touadéra was also appointed by the 11-member Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS, to mediate Gabon's transition to constitutional order. ACAS includes all CEMAC nations as well as Angola, Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda, and Sao Tome and Principe. CEMAC and ACAS suspended Gabon's membership and condemned the use of force to resolve political conflicts after Gabon's military ousted the president on August 30 and declared Nguema as military ruler. Nguema says his trip to the CAR after visiting Equatorial Guinea and Congo was aimed at requesting the lifting of international sanctions which were imposed to press for a return to democratic rule in Gabon.
C'était pour échanger avec le président.
Nguema says he told Touadéra that the military takeover was vital to free Gabon from a very long rule that failed to improve living conditions of civilians. Nguema says the military junta needs time to restore stability, ensure sustainable economic development, conduct a national dialogue, and revise the electoral code before organizing transparent and fair elections that will usher in civilian rule. The junta leader said the military took over to avoid bloodshed because Gabon's opposition was preparing to take up arms to defend their victory that Ali Bongo stole in an August 26 election. He said Gabon citizens generally support the military for seizing power without bloodshed from Ali Bongo, who took power in 2009 following the death of his father, Omar, who had led the Central African country since 1967. CAR State TV showed crowds of Gabon citizens anxious to see Nguema. Some carried placards congratulating the junta leader for what they called his courage to save Gabon from the Bongo family's close to 60-year rule that did not develop the oil-producing nation. Rigobert Anta, who was among those gathered, told Gabon State TV that he is ready to return to Libreville after spending 7 years in exile in the CAR's capital, Bangui. He says in 2016, he was declared wanted by Gabon's government for protesting when Ali Bongo claimed he had scored 49.8% of votes to narrowly defeat his challenger, Jean Ping, who had 48.2% of votes in that year's presidential election. Anta says he would be grateful if the military junta hands power to civilian rule within a maximum of 2 years. Nguema did not say how much time he needs to return to constitutional rule. The military junta says it will invite Gabon's citizens in exile for a national dialogue, but did not say when the dialogue will take place. Nguema promised to open an embassy in the CAR to take care of the needs of Gabon's citizens. Besides ECAS and CEMAC, the African Union and the United Nations have also imposed sanctions to exert pressure on Nguema to hand power to civilians. France, China, Russia, the United Kingdom, Canada, and the United States have also expressed concerns about the military junta taking over in Gabon and are asking for a return to normalcy. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
From Cameroon, we move to Haiti, where Vanda Felbab Brown, a senior fellow in the Strobe Talbot Center for Security, Strategy and Technology at Brookings, wrote a commentary in February titled Haiti in 2023, Political Abyss and Vicious Gangs. The United Nations authorized a one-year deployment of a Kenya-led force to Haiti to help quell gang violence. She talks to VOA's Yahya Suhiub about the close ties between the government of Haiti and gangs.
Unfortunately, Haiti has for decades suffered from governments and governance that is not accountable. And that is not just an inclusive. So although Haiti at one point was an enormously rich country, it has also suffered from this really troubled politics. And it has oscillated between authoritarian governments, which were brutal, But an elected government that nonetheless continued practicing very exclusionary rent-seeking politics and were highly corrupt. And in recent years, recent decades, the government have more and more relied on gangs, on organized gangs. At the same time, politicians and businessmen have used the armed gangs as a muscle for conducting illegal business, whether illegal political business or illegal economic business, and also to obtain votes.
Vanda, you're talking about gangs. You're talking about what? These impoverished young men controlling over half the capital? How could that be?
Absolutely. So especially in the capital in Port-au-Prince, the gangs control maybe 80% or maybe even 90% of the territory. The government controls really tiny slivers of the capital. And by control, this includes really physical territorial control, with the gangs being able to prevent who goes into neighborhoods they control, who goes out, where the roads are accessible. So we are really seeing just a collapse of the state in Haiti, a state that has always been exclusionary, that has often been against the Haitian people instead of serving them, that is manipulated by the interests of the political and economic elite for their very narrow rent-seeking behavior against the people. But at the same time, the gangs, the armed muscle that the oligarchs have been using, have become independent. They have slipped the leash. They are no longer just controlled by the politicians, and they are ruling territories, much of the capitals, expanding beyond, and they're also very brutal toward local populations.
And because of that, Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry has called for foreign intervention to break the gang's siege and restore basic functionality. We come now to the present stage where the United Nations has authorized a one-year deployment of a Kenya-led force to the country to help quell the violent gangs. But you wrote that by any intervention, especially a temporary limited one, would face enormous challenges. So how will this Kenyan intervention fare in Haiti?
Well, we are yet to see. There are a tremendous amount of uncertainties as to what the intervention will seek to accomplish and what will the force posture be. The Kenyan government said they would contribute 1,000 personnel, much of it stemming coming from some of the elite police forces in Kenya that presumably have good capacities. Now, nonetheless, this force is meant to supplement the Haitian National Police. The assessment varies of how many police officers are left. Somewhere maybe on the high side of 9,000 police officers for the entire country, on the low side as little as 3,000. The gang membership is not well known, but there are maybe 200 gangs that coalesce in different coalitions. But the gang numbers, the gangs altogether, number perhaps in thousands of members. Some high estimates put the gangs at 10,000 members, 10,000 fighters.
That's Vanda Felba-Brown, a senior fellow in the Strobe Talbot Center for Security Strategy and Technology at the Brookings Institute. She was speaking with my colleague Yahes Wihib. We'd love to hear your remarks on issues in this broadcast. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. This fan says, hi, VOA South Sudan in Focus. I'm Aligo Joel in Mvepe Refugee Settlement, Uganda. I'm tired of hearing decrees and government worker appointments made by President Salva Kiir every year. I request the president to advertise national jobs through public notice boards to ensure the selection of qualified and trustworthy workers instead of relying on decrees and appointments. Appointments and decrees promote tribalism and limit the chances for qualified citizens to secure jobs. Advertisement is a better approach for you, Mr. President, to attract qualified national workers. I hope my advice reaches you, Your Excellency Salva Kiir. Thank you. This fan says, good evening, South Sudan in Focus. I'm Jacob Dior Machueng from Euroleague State. The country's leadership is mishandling the Ministry of Finance by frequently changing directors, which undermines the ministry's stability and encourages embezzlement of the country's funds. The country's economic sectors have been severely affected since the outbreak of the civil war in 2013 and again in 2016, leading to rampant corruption and a lack of financial accountability. As a concerned citizen, I urge the newly appointed finance minister to rescue our jeopardized economy. Another fan says, hello, John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. I am Benia Richard from Yei. We appreciate your program and your tireless work. God bless you and reward you. Peter Gonyanyang Majongdul from the border town of Numili says, as the world celebrates Teachers' Day today, I congratulate and appreciate my teachers, including James Jokagot, Anyanga Kolnial of the primary school, Samuel Madul, John Mayom, Taco Charles, Vusiri of Fula SS, and finally Mayom Nyogdeng Mabioratem, Bola Nyith, Malwal Chwai War Kwan of Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Sciences and Technology. This fan says, good evening, John Tanza and VOA staff. Call me Aligo in Juba. I would like to express my disappointment regarding the recent events in Yei. There are ongoing killings in the villages of Yei, but the authorities, including the commissioner and the governor, remain silent. This silence suggests that the authorities may condone these killings. What is the purpose of conducting civil-military relations in Yei if such incidents persist? Something must be done. James Roy Majok in Unity State Bentiu Town says, hi, Nabil Biagio and John Tanza. I appeal to the Minister of Finance and Economic Planning for the Republic of South Sudan. Honorable Minister, please ensure timely payment of civil servant salaries. Given the high inflation rates and the scarcity of commodities across South Sudan due to the closed Sudan border, this has resulted from the ongoing fighting in Sudan. Mading Malwal Alwong in Juba says, Uganda is attempting to take advantage of our internal crisis by adopting a strategy similar to Russia's approach towards its neighbors. This is evident from Uganda's provocative actions. Since 2012, Uganda has advanced deep inside South Sudan's territory. We need a swift and effective approach to restore our boundaries. This listener says, hello, John Tanza. Call me Akol Nicholas Madut from Kwajok Warap State, South Sudan. I call upon the Warap State government to construct roads across the 6 counties of Warap State to facilitate easier movement. Tong Chuni Yong Kwai from Juba, South Sudan says the appointment of Angelina as the Minister of Interior in the Republic of South Sudan is a commendable move by President Salva Kiir Mayardit and First Vice President Dr. Riek Machar Ten. To me, she is the right person for the job. We continue to await the deployment of unified forces in the training centers since 2020. Thanks. And finally, this fan says, hello, John Tanza and Nabil. I am Bakule Xavier from Koboko District, West Nile, Uganda. Thanks for keeping us updated. My message goes to Sudanese leaders, especially in Sudan. I urge them to negotiate lasting peace as thousands of Sudanese people are seeking refuge in neighboring countries. Thanks. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate hearing from all of you. Keep those comments coming.
And that's all we prepared for you this Friday, October 6, 2023. We now leave you with Ahmed Brema and the song Mabruk Shababa Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Cornelius, we wish you a lovely weekend. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.